This is an interview with Nathalie Dussulier, June 19, Side 1. Would you tell me something about your own family background and where you come from, and a little bit of about your education, because you went from a doctorate in the pharmacological sciences into information and science. And I'd be interested to know how all of that works. So,
my family, you want to know about my family?
Just briefly, where you come from and who you are, really.
I was born in Nice, here, from Russian parents. Huh? And I went to school in Nice, and then I did my pharmacological studies in Marseille and then in Paris, where I prepared my PhD in pharmacology and a lot of other studies around the pharmacology, Institut Pasteur, biology, hematology, serology, virology, biology. And I decided to study business administration when my husband studied that for his own career. He had a PhD in political sciences and a diploma of engineer. Then I did this diploma in business administration, complete at the beginning when it was when it started in France. I think it was the first year. I was not very good because the law was not interesting me a lot, but I was selected because they didn't have any scientists studying that. And they have selected one pharmacologist and one veterinaire.
And were you the only woman, or were there other women?
No, there were other women.
And when was this?
When? In 50s something? No, I don't remember, 58, maybe 60,
yeah.
Maybe in 1960. I'm not even quite sure, I would have to check. And then I studied supplementary diplomas in industry pharmaceutical industry, to work in the pharmaceutical industry. I didn't want to work in the pharmacy. And in 61, I had a car accident, and I stayed in, at the end of 60, I stayed about 1 year in a gips, lying completely. And after that, when I came out of this story, the doctor said that I cannot work standing for 3-4 years, and I have to change my job. I was working in a pharmacy doing the medical biological analysis, and I have to change. And I didn't know what to do with this kind of diploma and not standing. Because just before my accident, I found a job in the Laboratoire de Lagrange, a pharmaceutical laboratory, to do the control of drugs. It's not fascinating. Now, I think it's not fascinating, but at that time I was happy. But then I had this accident with our car just done. I was with my three children. And
they were not hurt?
Not really. My husband was hurt. He was open here, but I was hurt because I was thrown out of the car. And I decided to put an annonce, an advertisement, mm-hmm. in Le Monde, say doctor en pharmacie with these kind of diplomas, knowing French, English, German, Russian, Spanish, would like to find a job, but if possible in the same area, but not standing, something like that. And during 2 weeks I didn't receive anything, and 2 weeks later I received a letter from CNRS saying that they are very interested by my candidature to do analysis abstracting and indexing of journals in pharmacology, biochemistry, biophysics, and in Russian and German. I say that's stupid, I would never do this kind of job, but I decided to go and to see what it was. And I arrived in CNRS at the headquarters, and I was horrified. It was a very large room of people sitting like in a classroom, like that, and one lady sitting on a strap, looking at all this. We're all people with PhDs and masters in different disciplines that CNRS was covering at the time for business in IT. And they say, oh, we want you, absolutely. Or they ask me to do some correction, to correct the manuscript.
Yes.
Mistakes. I never did that before, but I did. I think I did it well because they were very happy for stupid work. But and then they say, oh, we want you to start next week. I said, no, I can't. My husband is not there. I want to talk to him before taking a job, and he was traveling for his work. And they said, no, you can start, and if you don't like it, you just leave. No obligation, your contract is going to be processed, but it takes 2 months or 3 months, and don't worry. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And I started. In fact, it was quite interesting. It was a little bit difficult because I knew Russian, they gave me a Bulgarian, Polish, different, let's say, Czech related languages. But I said, no, I know Russian, not Ukrainian. So they said, yes, but if you're going to do it, who can do it? Then I really tried to do it. But anyway, I did that during a year, a little bit more than a year.
So this was preparing abstracts?
Preparing abstracts and doing a kind of indexing to do this index,
yes.
Index matière,
yes.
subject index. And then I said, okay, I do that a little time, and then I recover, and then I try to do something else. At that time, Jean Viard was the director of CDST. And a little bit more than a year after I came, the director, who was a Spanish man, a researcher working with Jean Viard, he was never there, he was in his laboratory, but he was the official director.
The official director of CDST?
Yeah. No. The official director of CDST was Jean Viard, but CDST had several departments. And the official director of Bulletin Signalétique, who was the largest department, was this Spanish, I don't even remember the name. And he decided to leave to Spain to continue his research in Spain. And he was replaced by a guy from Institut Pasteur called Dr. Brigaut, B-R-Y-Y.
Oh, B-R-Y, yeah.
G-O-O.
Oh,
Brigaut. And he came from Institut Pasteur. He was moved from Institut Pasteur to become the director of CDST and to try to think about making it more fashionable. Maybe they will start talking about automation, not creation of online files or anything like that, but just automation of the operation. Because Bulletin Signalétique, as you know, was a very large operation, and we were doing author indexes, 500,000 authors. Then the people were sitting on very long tables like that, maybe 20 or 30 people. letter A, B, C, and they were putting in alphabetical order like that.
It was on cards?
Yeah, on pieces of, on stamps, even on stamps, because to do the abstract, we had a piece of paper like that. On the top, there were the authors, on, like on small stamps. On the side, the subject, and here the abstract. Then the people cut.
Oh, cut, yes.
And all the authors, and then cut the indexes. And then they were putting on some tables all the indexes, and on some other tables some authors. And the authors were classified by clerical people, and the subject indexes were classified by scientists, because they tried to organize, you know, like it was not a machine, a computer reject if it's not, if things were wrong or not very good. And the idea was to try to automate these operations. That was Dr. Brigot. He knew a little bit about automation, but really a little bit. It was in 62, 63. And at that time, Saint-Gobain company, it's a very large chemical company. They have started the automation of their documentation, the first in France, Saint-Gobain. Gobain. Gobain. A-I-N.
Gobain.
It was a very large chemical company. And one of the guys who was in charge of that, called Pigagnol, Monsieur Pigagnol, he was a friend of Brigot, and they were coming to work together. And this Brigot, after a few months, I don't remember how many months, decided that I was going to help him. I was in charge with one department of Bulletin Signalétique. He said that I'm going to help him with this automation operation, whatever. And as we didn't have a lot of space, I was sitting with him, a very large office, like this room, but we were sitting, both of us, in this room. And in France, it's unusual. Because the people, they like their privacy, they like to have their own offices. But he wants to work with me so that they would be able to, we would be able to exchange information. And this is how we started talking about automation. And then Dr. Brigot, he was offered by a large American laboratory, Eli Lilly, I suppose, or something like that, a job in America, and he decided to go to America. And he left us with all the problems. Mm-hmm. And no chief for biology. No, Dr. Brigot, he was the chief for biomedical. There were three departments at that time. One department was everything which is around biology, agriculture, medicine, biology, pharmacology, biophysics. Another department was mathematics, physics, chemistry, etc. A chief was Madame Duval, a lady called Madame Duval. And another department, sciences humaines.
Oh, yeah.
Science. There were three bulletins signalétiques separate. And Brigot was in charge with the biology part. And he decided to leave. And then the biology part stayed without a chief. And Jean Viard, at that time, we stayed, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months without chief, directly under the direction of Jean Viard. And I remember it was in at the end of the year, Jean Viard called me in his office and he asked me, I hope you're not going to go on holidays for Christmas. I said, why? No, we expected to go on holidays for Christmas. He said, no, you stay. I said, why? He said, because you are going to take the biology, to take over the biology. And I said, it's impossible. I'm the last arrived, and there were two ladies, one in charge of medicine and the other in charge with agriculture, who was there for a long time. And I said, we have a lot of problems with them. No, no. But you take the biology and you announce them yourself. That was very convenient. And then he said, by the way, Madame Duval, no, that started like that. Then I took over the biology, I talked to the lady, I said, look, I didn't ask for anything because I'm not planning to stay anyway, but this is life. And but they were okay. They said, look, we know you, and we don't know in this field who could have been named. There were a few names that people I didn't know. We don't want them. There were researchers that nobody wants to do. Nobody wants anymore for research. And they say, okay, you are not good anymore for research, you go to information. This was at that time kind of a possibility. And we start working, and we did quite a good job with starting the automation of these authors and indexes. And a year later, Madame Duval was retired. And the director of human sciences, who was a geograph, a researcher in geography, didn't want to do the job anymore, decided to leave. And one day Jean Viard called me and he said, now I would like to tell you that you are going to take over also the mathematical, physical part and the human side. I said, look, I don't know anything in mathematics, I'm not very good at that. And no, they said, no, you can do it, you have very good people from the field with you. You have two deputies, because in each year we have two deputies. The two deputies are very good, one physics with yes. Physics, the others with chemistry. And then you take the human science. I said, no, I can't. Human sciences, I cannot. Because we have a completely reverse look on things. I'm very precise, I like to do the work very precisely, etc. They were fantasies, they were researchers, they were not coming to work, they were coming, their vulnus signalétique were late for 2 years' time, and they say it doesn't matter because it's in human sciences and we have the life. And they say, okay, Viard said it's very easy. You take them or I just disband the group. And I came home, I told my husband, you know, some of these people, they are very bad, but some need to have a job and they have families, etc., what I'm going to do. And I said, okay, I will do it at interim until you find someone who can really take over completely. He said, okay. And but I was lucky because half of the people during my interim decided to leave because I forced them to come.
Come to work, yeah.
Yeah, to come to work. And some had several works, several jobs. Then it was not permitted, but you cannot come to several jobs. One had a restaurant, you know. But they found a lady, Maître des requêtes au Conseil d'État. She was excellent. Louise Cadou. She was Madame Louise Cadou. She is now working in Conseil d'État. OUX.
OUX.
Louise Cadou. She was excellent. She always was telling me that I'm sorry that you didn't do the interim longer because maybe some of those would have left. But she recruited new people and they start working really.
So
then we started to study a little bit more the automation of all the bulletin signalétique, and then Jean Viard retired. And Jean Viard was replaced by Jacques Dollier. Of course, it was very, very difficult because Jacques Dollier was coming from the Délégation Générale à la Formation Scientifique et Technique in the Ministry of... it was part of the Prime Minister. La DGRST, it was called the DGRST. Yeah. And...
I want to ask you a little about that sort of administrative setup. But so he came from.
Then he came, and it was very difficult because we didn't know that. And Jean Viard once called the chiefs of the different departments, the chief librarian, the chief of. We had a kind of a research unit where they were trying to... Jacques Cordonnier, you may have heard Cordonnier, he was doing a kind of research on cards to do... don't even remember what he was doing. We had the reprography department with Jean-Jacques Bastardi, a very, very large department where they were doing the machines themselves for reprography. And we came here and we were... sitting there, and he said, "I want to tell you, this is your new boss." And there was a silence, terrible. Dollier was very shy, and it was a silence for 10 minutes. Nobody knew what to say. He, Pierre, could have informed us before. And I said, okay, we will. He said, "I hope you will help him," or things you say that in that case. And I just say, "I have to say something. I'm the last arrival, but I have to say something." And I say, "Okay, we will help you as much as we can." That's some stupid thing that you say in that case. And then he was always very grateful to me to have broken this silence. And Dollier recruited a young guy called Pierre Buffet, whom you may have heard of. He is the director of international relations of Kestel. Kestel is a host computer, large host computer. They are doing chemical extracts in France. They are distributing chemical extracts. And this Pierre Buffet, he was coming from the army. Just from the army, and he studied in the north of France, and he was supposed to help us with computing. But at that time, they were telling us all the time, we said, "This is what we want, this is what we want." "Oh, that's impossible, that's impossible, that's impossible." And I said, "Look, I have to understand why all of this is impossible." And we had the possibility to have computing courses at INRIA, Institut National de la Recherche Informatique et Automatique, INRIA. It was INRIA. And we decided, André Berthelot, she was the chief of physics part, and myself, we decided to go and to follow the courses, to try to understand why everything was impossible.
Can I interrupt you? When you began the automation, you were talking about this little author indexes on a piece of paper, the exercises of stamps and so on. You were beginning to look at automation at that point. Were they actually experimenting with punch cards, or what were they doing in that very early period?
Okay. Myself, I never worked with punch cards.
Yeah.
But there was a department in CDST under the responsibility of Cordonnier, a guy named Cordonnier I never worked with.
Oh.
It was a transition period. He was experimenting with punch cards. This was a system, but he was experimenting with punch cards more for translations, because there was a translation department, to try to find the translations that were already done, because it's very expensive to do translations. And when a researcher asked for a translation, it was interesting to know if the translation was already done. But I never worked with French cards. We started working with a computer. It was a modest, very modest attempt. And it was more difficult to do that than by hand at the beginning, because you know, in America you had the experience with that, but in France there was not much experience.
Do you remember what the computer was, an IBM 360? Or?
I think it was an IBM 360.
Yeah, because that seems to be when these things started to become possible.
Yeah, I think it was an IBM 360. But I wouldn't put my hand to burn, because I really don't remember this period. And this is how we started the automation and why I studied computing.
So where did you go to study the computing?
At INRIA.
INRIA, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It was near Versailles.
Okay.
The other institute.
It was not
a study very, I would say, high level of mathematics. It was really practical on software, on hardware, on...
So you studied some programming and systems analysis and those kinds of things?
Yeah, more systems analysis than programming myself, because it was very difficult at that time to do the programming. It's much more difficult than now. This is how I went.
So then you went to do that because people kept saying, well, you couldn't do what it is that you folk wanted to do. And
yeah, we wanted to understand.
Mm-hmm. So then you gathered this expertise, and then what happened? You came back to the application of it.
And then we continued the automation. We produced the bulletin signalétique with the computer. And then we decided that it was not enough, and we start thinking about Pascal database. And Pierre Buffet and myself, we are the parents of the Pascal database. That was our idea. But at that time, the database was a byproduct of the bulletin signalétique. You know, we were doing bulletin signalétique, and then we had that all on tapes, and we tried to do a database with that, which is the reverse way of doing, which was, but we have understood that some years more, because there were so many corrections at the database. First, we had to take all the marks, all the codes, out of the database. It was taking a lot of time, because we needed a lot of codes. Nobody wants to abandon the bulletin signalétique with italics and bold and different type of characters and all the mathematical signs, etc. Then we were doing all that, and then on tape you cannot do anything, because the tape was so dirty with all these codes and marks.
For printing purposes. Yeah.
It was in fact a printed bulletin signalétique on tape. Mm. And when we saw how it was difficult to use these tapes, we started thinking of reversing the operation. But it was very, very difficult to tell to the editing staff, because they didn't want to abandon anything, and they all considered that nothing can be treated with the same system. That physics and medicine, they need a different system, and mathematics and human sciences, they need a special computing system for them. And we have heard that for years. And we decided that no, we are going to use only one system, and if there is a need of some adaptation for mathematics, for example, we'll see that later. And this is how we started the automation.
What did you do by way of the discovery and application of different standards, bibliographical standards, the mark formats and things of that kind?
Okay, I was involved in ISO TC46 during many, many years. Many, many years. I even chaired one of the annual meetings, etc. We were not using MARC, because MARC was for librarians.
We were talking about mark formats, and you were not using mark formats.
We were not using mark format because it was considered to be too complicated for scientific information system. And in fact, no one of our colleagues, friends from the information side, with whom we were working, we already were working with chemical abstracts and the physikalische Berichte and INSPEC and all the organizations, the Russians, etc. Each of us, we were using our own formats.
When you say you're working with those organizations, what form did that work take?
In XUEBI, we have been doing a common list of periodicals processed by in the scientific and technical information systems. We have every year a meeting of XUEBI, and we were discussing our problems about the journal, exchange of publications, etc. And it was decided to start working for kind of communication format that could be used by all the systems. It was not very successful because it was difficult, but it helped us to understand what the problem were. But the decision was really not to use MARC.
And so you devised your own format.
Then the world was really divided in two parts. The librarians that were using MARC, including our own librarians, and the scientific information centers that were using more or less their own formats, but simple formats, much simpler formats. And it was only later, in many, many years after, that it was decided to work at the reconciliation of MARC and the systems that were. We used the Unisyst. We have done a kind of Unisyst format, and we have moved to this Unisyst format when Unisyst started. It seems a little bit strange, but at that time so many, many things were going that we were running a little bit in all the directions. All these information centers, they were trying to find a way to work, to produce their publications better and cheaper. In fact, that was the goal of all of us. And we were visiting ourselves, each other, to see how we were working. There was no secret. We were showing, all the people were showing what they were doing. And I remember being in Columbus, and they were doing their coding. They tried to show to us, but it was just the beginning. It was just the beginning.
So when you began the Pascal database, you also included the Sciences Humaines.
Yes, later. We started by the biology, and then we started with Sciences Humaines. But the Sciences Humaines, Bulletin Signalétique was published only every 3 months. And then they all considered they had time, and it took more time to do the Sciences Humaines. But Louis Cadou has done it. We have automated that. This is how the Pascal database started.
Can I ask you, just before we move on to those the developments that followed, I've come across a number of sort of organizational bodies that somehow seem to have been related to you. You mentioned one, the Délégation à la Recherche Scientifique.
Délégation Générale à la Recherche Scientifique et Technique.
And then apparently in 1959 there was a little later.
59?
Apparently that was set up in 59.
The DGRST, maybe, I don't know.
And then there was a Comité d'études de la documentation and an Association nationale pour l'étude de la documentation, somehow related to these bodies. It comes out of this article. And I wondered what these were and how important and what bearing they had on CNRS and CDST.
1959. I don't know. I was not there at that time. But
well, they apparently in 1963 there was something called
Planeta.
This was a plan, and it sort of.
Yes, but this plan that Brigo was supposed to.
This is what it's.
I cannot read you.
It's a Roman 6, 5, 6, and 186 semicolon plan, and they keep referring to that in this thing. Let me turn this off.
Association nationale pour l'étude de la documentation automatisée.
Okay.
Yes, this is le sixième plan is plan of governmental plan. This is was not specially for documentation of our information. It was the plan for our government.
Yes.
This was one part of this plan.
The implication was that it part of.
But it has no
impact on. Yeah.
No, it has no impact. The only result of that was the nomination of Jacques Brigo to try to apply this ANEDA. But in fact, he very fast he put his own ideas. Bulletin signalétique before. And then they decided to set up the Centre Documentation Sciences Humaines. It was a separate centre.
So it was split apart from CDHT?
Yes. First, the bulletin signalétique was in three parts. And then everything was reunited.
Essentially, when you were interim director, that was starting to happen?
Yes, let's say that. And then they have created two centres. This was when the Centre Documentation Scientifique et Technique moved to a new place. And the Centre Documentation Sciences Humaines was moved to the new Maison des Sciences de l'Homme when it was built. Then there were two centres.
And each centre was still producing the bulletin scientifique?
Yes, each centre were doing exactly the same.
Yeah. Was there a common processing centre for the two?
Yes. At one time, because then they start using the computer of Maison des Sciences de l'Homme.
So they were producing then.
Yeah, but with the same system.
Yeah.
The same computer people were doing that. There were a lot of different periods.
Yes, there's one period, I think it was 64 that I came across, where the bulletin signalétique seemed to be split into any number of different sections,
yes.
And then later on they were...
This was at the request of researchers. They did want to have a big bulletin signalétique to read, and with automation it was easier to do that. But in fact, it has created a lot of problems with all the automation because of duplication. Because physics and biophysics, in physics you cannot take over biophysics, but in biology you need biophysics. But
so
a number of abstracts were put in several places. This was another indexing added in what bulletin signalétique it's going to go. Propose d'une informe technique destinée à proliférer les publications scientifiques, dénonce la concurrence.
So there's this attempt at that level to begin to think about countering the influence of English and American. Does that come to anything?
No, I remember this, but this was like one of the studies that didn't lead anywhere. I am negative, but you know, all these things, they were created, they talked a lot, and then
Well,
I even didn't remember. Yes, now that I see that, I remember, but it has no... Look, we have been working, and some people in a corner, they were been talking, and we didn't pay very much attention of all this, because When you read that, you don't say that. It's stupid. Contrer la prolifération envahissante des publications scientifiques d'origine étrangère. You don't want them, you don't buy them. You cannot stop publishing. It's so stupid even to say that.
Yeah. And of course, in your case, your scientists and others would want access to that material. That's one of the functions of the book.
This is one of the reasons why Pascal database was built and didn't stop doing chemistry, because most of the publications were coming from the States. And we could have said, okay, we take chemical abstracts and we don't do it, because we were afraid that chemical abstracts, as they have been warning already, one day they will stop giving to Europe and to Japan the information in chemistry. And we say we have to continue. Imagine that is going to happen. This is how was created the Centre de Bulletin Signalétique in 1939, because we had no more information coming from abroad because of the war. Yeah. And I think this is talks.
Why would
my own opinion.
Sure. Why would Chemabs stop? They were actually giving the information, not selling it.
No, they were selling it.
Selling it, yes. Yeah. So why would they stop?
I don't know. At one time, there was strange idea in America, and sometimes they continued, because I can tell you once a conversation I had with Al Gore on that, but that was much later. It was a competition in research in chemistry. And they were afraid that the European and the Japanese, they will use the American databases to compete with the research on chemistry done. If you give all the information to the French researchers, they can do as well as you can do. And that was the American Chemical Society. They said, no, we don't want any more our information to be distributed. There were rumors like that. And particularly when Chemical Abstracts started distributing the tapes. Of course, they always were selling, and the problem was not to buy, because it's much more expensive to do it yourself than to buy.
So in developing Pascal database in the area of chemistry, did you do all the indexing again yourselves, or were you able to?
No, we were doing everything again ourselves. This is how I started negotiating with, for example, the American Physical Society, and with the engineering index, etc., so that they could provide us information over the index. We were prepared to buy.
Did that work
but
out?
That was it worked with physics. With it's only a problem of people. Engineering index, they were working too slowly, and at that time, before that was the time of John Krebs. And then now everything has changed, but it was very difficult, because we had to translate, because the French researchers at that time, they want to have the information in French.
That actually brings up the question of the audience for the Bulletin Signalétique at that time, because it seems to me it's changed very considerably.
No, the goal was always the same.
Yeah.
The researchers, yeah, CNRS and university, about 100,000 people, in fact. That was a target. And we had no problem of money. This was our goal, and we were not even, they asked us to recover some of the money, at least to cover the printing of Bulletin Signalétique. We recovered selling that only to pay the printing, not for all the operation. And nobody asked us to do better. But Bulletin Signalétique was bought by libraries all over the world. I found, when I traveled, I found Bulletin Signalétique in the most remote libraries, including Taiwan, where I suppose there are not many people can read French, but still they had Bulletin Signalétique. And
most of the American research libraries take it either as a whole or selected parts of a different.
Yes, we had a lot of subscribers at one time, 32,000 subscribers. No, there were a lot of subscribers of Bulletin Signalétique, but that was not the goal. Mm. The goal was really to sell French research.
So this was just an incidental benefit, in a sense, financial.
Yes, of course, our administrators, they were very happy to fund this money so that they spend less. But that was not the purpose. The purpose was never to be a commercial organization, never. This is why there was no competition, really, with other centers.
Mm.
We wanted to have cooperation to do better our work. That's all, not to compete.
So essentially to reach the French scientists researchers. Because I think that's interesting, because my sense is that INIST has a rather different focus.
No, but it was not the purpose. It was not the purpose. The purpose was to become a European center. In fact, if you see, I brought something interesting that if we have time we can have it. It's all the goal was la confirmation du transfert à Nancy, la nomination d'un chef de projet, conseil de projet, voilà, la préparation de l'organigramme du futur institut, afin que celui-ci puisse répondre aux impératifs d'innovation, de productivité et de commercialisation, tout en évoluant avec les techniques nouvelles.
So this is the, in a sense, the new bit, the commercialization.
This commercialization is new, and this is why we thought to la création d'une filiale de commercialisation, so that we could better sell what we were doing. Better sell.
Okay.
You know, the goal was la création de l'INIST en vue de constituer un pôle national de production et de diffusion de l'information scientifique et technique spécialisée à l'intention de la recherche et des entreprises.
And that's new too, isn't it? The entreprises.
Mm. And, you know, these are all the critical science for engineers. Informatique documentaire, l'outil indispensable au fonctionnement de tout centre de documentation moderne.
So those are the organizations within France that are cooperating with
INIST. Yes, organizations. Mm. This is a cooperation with Bibliothèque de France. This is a beginning of research.
Bibliométrie,
infométrie. First steps to the numérisation.
Numerical databases?
Numerization is digitalization.
Yeah.
L'INIST et l'informatique documentaire, quels enjeux? These are, who are your interlocuteurs? Who are the people who mm-hmm. you talk with, or the names of the responsible? This is special for IFLA. It was the year of IFLA. It was INIST yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It was even done bilingual. This is the first automation. This is 91, automation of document primaire, archivage numérique. That was that long. But maybe these are all the centers with whom corporate.
So these are the international centers?
International centers. Centre scientifique, la construction en Belgique, bâtiment, Fach Information Centrum, Karlsruhe, with the Russians, with Viniti, Gesellschaft für Mathematik, Informe Social Wissenschaft, Nabon, SWIDOC, IGO. Conseil National de la Recherche, Konigli Bibliothèque, Japinfo. We had a very close relation.
When you say you have a close relationship with these organizations, what does that actually involve?
Oh, we have been working together, exchanging information, exchanging journals, exchanging abstracts with the Russians. With the Japanese, they had their their own offices in our offices, and we had a center in Japan, in Jixi.
Okay.
This is the last I did.
Yeah.
It was a kind of follow-up of the GRST, but it was in the ministry of... this ministry have changed very often. It was Ministère de la Recherche, and then Ministère de l'Éducation et de la Recherche, and we were separated. But BNIST was created when Jacques Michel, he was cultural attaché or scientific attaché, I'm sure I remember, in Washington. When he came back, for reasons I don't know really, they have created the Bureau National de l'Information Scientifique et Technique. Their goal was like the GRST, to be a kind of hat for all the information activities in France. And they were organizing. I remember, I don't remember many meetings in BNIST, but we, for example, we were working with BNIST on how to participate into European databases all together. For example, was database in metallurgy called SDIM, and we were working with BNIST to see how France could participate in this database in Europe, European database. And then Jacques Michel went to The Hague. He is one of the director of information in patent offices in the European Patent Office. Maybe now he retired, I don't know, because I don't follow that. But he was one important person. But then BNIST was dissolved, and he was replaced by MIDIST. And MIDIST, MIDIST, c'est la mission interministérielle. But their goal was always the same. INIST and CDST, etc., were always officially apart, but really not, because we were always so big. And the BNIST and MIDIST, they were four or five people.
Where did you get your money from? I mean, as an organization?
CNRS.
CNRS
from the Ministry of Research.
Okay.
We were 100% budget CNRS.
So these organizations that we're talking about are really, as you say, just...
coordinating bodies.
Have a broad coordinating function.
Yes, yeah. They had only coordinating function. An important coordinating function, but coordinating.
But little impact, I gather, on... what you folks were doing.
Let's say so. Let's say that, not officially. But it's always, we were so big that we could do whatever we wanted anyway. And also because the CNRS said, look, we are CNRS and we do what we want. And you?
It seems there was a major re-evaluation of what was going on in CDST in 1974. Or thereabouts. The comment was passage d'une publication traditionnelle organisée en fonction des disciplines universitaires et à des publications spécialisées adaptées à les clientèles particulières.
But this was always a part of putting together, splitting, specializing. And in 1974, we have produced specialized publication, more targeted to professions.
Okay. The comment was that this was the evolution of the concept of marketing. This is from an article by Caroline
Vigan-Sacoun. This was my librarian in it.
Yeah.
And she was a lady who moved the collections.
And she wrote an article, a brief article about the history of the
mm-hmm.
view. And so this was, I'm interested in this notion of moving to a much more commercial, market-oriented service.
Because, you know, the researchers, at the beginning, Bulletin Signalétique was not really sold to industry. And more the industries in France they realize the role of information, because at the beginning they didn't consider information for the activity as very important. And then more and more they started creating documentation centers like Ron Poulenc, like big companies, and hiring documentalists. And that was very funny because most of our people were moving to these places. And at the beginning we considered that like a disaster, but at the end we were very happy because that was our best promotion.
Yes, spreading the word.
And of course these people, they wanted to have more specialized. For example, we had contract that was done for money with a big cardiological and a drug company that working in cardiology. We were doing a special bulletin for them on cardiology, on specialized questions on cardiology related to their drugs, and we were selling them 300-400 copies, and they distributed it free of charge to the doctors in the hospital. This type of operation, this type of operation. But the CDST, we always tried, and also, you know, that corresponded period after the resolution of the Conseil des ministres de la Communauté Européenne in 71, to try to target more and to help more the European industry. And this is a part of Euronet, and this is what we found at that time. And this was possible because the Pascal database was at that time stable.
Mm.
And then it was nothing to extract from the database specialized. Then we had specialized in different specialized fields. We had special bulletins in it.
So
there were the kind of profiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had profiles printed and profiles on paper.
When the online services came began, that must have affected some of this work, because presumably it would then be possible for these companies to search. That's
well,
and so on.
At the beginning, we only did the searches ourselves. We have a large department of producing profiles and researchers for the users. We were not online. We didn't want to provide online services ourselves. That was clear. Then we have given our databases to host computers to distribute online. But it has affected at a moment where we didn't want to do bulletins in Helvetic anymore. We tried to replace bulletins in Helvetic because the cost of printing was rising. Mm. The cost of paper was rising, the cost of printing was rising. And that was a period when we tried to tell people, look, we're going to provide you with profiles, group profiles, and we had some group profiles and we have some personalized profiles, and we were selling that to our users.
When did you stop publishing bulletins in Unitique as a periodical set? I should know that, and I'm not sure of the...
I don't remember. After I left CDST, I don't remember.
Not to worry, I can easily find that out.
You can find that, I really don't remember.
Mm. 158. Yeah. And it
had
been planned for a number of years and then it was produced. And Euronet Diane the discussions about it began in the early 70s too, I think.
It began after the resolution of the Council of Ministers in 71 to create a European network. It started with, there was a committee International pour la Documentation Scientifique et Technique, CIDST. And we had a meeting almost every week of this committee. I was one of the French representatives, Jacques Michel was the other one. First it was Delorme, who was Jacques Delorme, and then Jacques Michel. And we tried to prepare a European Information Network. And then there were a lot of groups in agriculture, in medicine, in metallurgy, with Georges Anderlin.
Yes.
He was the director of that. And I still see him, because he lives...
Then I was at Philips, at Chateau du Monté, Vendeuvre, in a building where we just rented the rooms, and two places in Paris. I was leaving at 6:15 on the morning, the train. Fortunately, they gave me a driver there and there. 6:15, the driver was bringing me to the station. At 6:15, I had the train. I arrived at 9 o'clock, I had the driver taking me. And the driver was carrying me to the two centers, one center, two centers, mostly on CDST, because where we had the library. And at 6:15, I was taking the train back. I arrived at 10:30, 11 o'clock, three times a week. And the rest of the time I was there, and I did that for 3 years. And I was fortunate to have a good health at that time. And we have started building the new building. That was the building was it was no building, only one stone, and not on the right place. And I had to follow the building, and to continue to recruit people, to train them, and to move. We moved 6 weeks the collection, and we never stopped serving the users. Because we have prepared by computer, we have prepared by computer the places of the collection. You know, we did by computer the places. We have studied the collection where it was. We calculate 5 years of place necessary, and we have etiquette. We have put tags to the places where the collection goes. We move during the night. During the day we have put in a track. We move during the night, and the next day they were put in place. And we had two tracks a day. And then was machines left in CDST, and we have both machines for INIST, and as soon as the collections came, we were going from INIST or from CDST. We moved there. They said it's impossible. Caroline Vigan, she was a librarian. When I told we are not going to stop, we are going to do that non-stop. She told me later, we thought but it will pass. She will think about it. And I said, no, I have tried that, not on a big collection, on a collection of We have changed the places of collection in a library from Vienna. All the collection of drugs came to us, and we used that way from Vienna to Geneva. And we used this non-stop operation. Of course, it was a small operation compared to that. But it worked. It worked. But the people, they worked very hard. Even though the people in their stay that did are not going to stay, they have done a marvelous job. And we hired people. The first we hired were the magasiniers to put on place. And there was always a librarian staying with them during the night to see that there was no questions particular where to put.
Were you still doing the work on developing the database?
Yes.
So that was going on as well?
Yes. The new periodicals were arriving at Nancy, which means the new people were doing the new one. And the CDST were doing the backlog because some of the people were leaving and some others didn't want to work anymore because they were greedy. Yeah.
Oh, there's a gun at...
I forgot. Every day at 12, so that you can check your...
I'm going to you, I'm right on 12.
It is 12.
Well, that's an extraordinary operation that you...
And this is more or less explained in the first one, more or less. This is Francais de Projet. And then we have used... that was nothing. Les travaux ont débuté en novembre.
Yes, and that's the building site.
Yes. Début novembre. It started in November 80.
Bulldozers at work.
November 87. November 87. Les bâtiments devraient commencer le 30 avril, le 28 mai. Yes, because there are five buildings. There is one book interesting, and I'm sure in Inis they have plenty of them. They can give you one. This is a book on Inis.
Oh, so this is the building. Oh, it does look very interesting. Very modern.
Something interesting, I'm not sure they will give that to you. Is five buildings. This is a library.
Mm-hmm.
These are the building of the databases, but it goes back. These are restaurants, meeting rooms, etc. And this is administration. No, it was very, very big. I don't know how many square meters.
But the staff, when you were recruiting them to set the service up, you had over 300, you were saying?
Yes, more. 350 plus the staff to do abstract forms.
Oh, this it was...
Some of the people were doing abstract forms, then we started doing them online forms.
What proportion of the abstracts would have been done outside by this piecework process? What proportion? It's a piecework process, really, isn't it?
Yes.
You
abstracts, maybe half of them, but indexing much less.
The indexing is done in-house, essentially.
Yes. Corporation. This is the database. There were some numbers here. This is about the morning. This is the retrospective bibliography is the most requested in 88.
Le goût du vin.
La querelle de l'ozone. La physiologie du marathonien. La machine de Boltzmann. Les machines neuronales. Cerveau et immunité. Les polymères conducteurs. Les mutilations sexuelles de la femme. These are bibliographies that were...
These were already form bibliographies that were requested again and again.
Yes.
Let's talk a little about the changing philosophy and the approach represented in Innes as opposed to the earlier CVST, because so few of the staff actually transferred, it was actually a new organisation.
Yes.
I mean, in a sense, emerging
from. This is what we wanted. First, the most important change was that commercialization became an important part. We have tried, and it was very difficult in an organization that is an administration, a public administration, to have a commercial department, because we were not supposed to sell. But we've obtained from the Ministry of Finance to create a filiale de commercialisation.
This is a company that's set up apart from...
Yes, it was... filiale is... how would you call it? It's a part of INIST Group. But what we did is an INIST Group. And the INIST Group, you have INIST, and you had INIST Diffusion. And the part of INIST Diffusion, it was 30 people or so, they were in charge with INIST Diffusion. They were in charge with commercialization. This is... You know, it was INIST with several departments, even not the department directorate. There were several directorates and a department of research. Directorate of production, development, and external relations, administration and finance, and this filiale, I don't know how they say that in English, filiale.
I think of it as something that's held at arm's length. Would that be... It's part of...
It's a part of the company.
It's kept a separate place. Yeah.
And this INIST Diffusion was in charge with the commercialization and the promotion of the product. It has the exclusivity of promotion and commercialization of all the INIST products. And they say it's an interface to adapt the offer to the demand.
Mm-hmm.
And they were working to... But they also had... they were able to do, to record, to collect the money that we were not able.
No, yes.
We were only able to spend the money with a controller in our offices. We always had a controller. It was a big budget, 400 million a year, francs. We had a big budget, and we had a controller. Then you can send 20 cents without the visa of the controller. Not on the opportunity, but the way it's spent. And the filiale was created in October 1988. The creation of the filiale de CNRS.
So that's very, very close to the beginning.
The construction started in 87. The 15 March, the institute was officially created, because the construction started before the institute was officially created. In September, we decided really to start with the director of the general of CNRS. He came and he said, okay, let's go. And in October, INIST Diffusion was created. And we have started recruiting the personnel of INIST in December. In 89, November, we started the reception of the buildings. It was very fast construction.
Yes, yes.
In November, December, we transferred the collections. In 1990, in January, we started INIST Diffusion to function officially, because it was created, but not officially. And in fact, in January 1980, we have started to charge the users through Inistitution. Before it was charged by us, but the money collected by CNRS.
But of course, at this time, the services are entirely digital. That is to say, they're online, or the sale of CD-ROMs. There's no longer the printed.
No. We kept the printed. The printed moved with us. The printed was abandoned in 92,
I suppose. 92, yeah. So for a short while, sure. It continued.
Yes, maybe for 2 years. Maybe in 92 it was decided not to print anymore.
So what was underlay that decision? What was the reason for deciding no longer to print? You mentioned
because
the escalating costs.
Yes, and because we wanted to move really from a publication center to a new center, and you cannot do everything. You cannot do everything, and we decided that as the publication started not to be printed, not to be sold as much. Oh, there were a lot of people that didn't want us to stop the publications, but it was really a decision to go online and to go digitalization and to.
Because you would be selling the CD-ROMs of the databases.
We were selling CD-ROMs, and we were selling profiles and bibliographic searches that we were doing ourselves, because not all our users, they were able to use CD-ROMs at that time.
Mm.
You know, it started really in the 90s to use that.
I mean, you were really very early in going so far with this sort of digital service.
Yes, we were the first in Europe.
Mm.
Yeah, we were very early, and it was very difficult to choose a technology. And in fact, we haven't chosen the good technology, because we have started with big digital, and this has not proved to be the best.
I assume though that there's constant transfer of the technology.
We had been changing the technology all the time.
Yeah.
The goal of the Lacote was really to have a new technology center. That was really his goal.
You mentioned that there was a research department for research and new products. What was it doing?
They were doing a lot of. They were doing a lot of bibliometries. They were working on automatic indexing. They were working on statistics, infometry. That was very important for CNRS, to know who is doing what. And of course, it's doing an analysis of what is going on, that you can preliminary study of an assisted indexing system. They were working on an assisted indexing system. We were working with a linguistic approach with a company called Ehrlich, segmentation techniques, optical character recognition, preliminary study of an assisted indexing system, evaluation and prospect. They were really a research department. Sometimes we were a little bit unhappy that they were too research and not applied enough. And then we remember that we are CNRS, and we cannot kill the research.
Well, I noticed in addition there was a development department.
Cognitive sciences. Mm-hmm. They were working. Bibliographic, Xavier Polanco, Ivana Roche, they are working. They were really studying a lot of things that first could help our staff to better work, to go forward, and also to do some research in cooperation with some research institute that work in linguistics in computer that were located in Nancy.
And were some of the what they were doing actually then incorporated into the work of INIST practically?
Yes, automatic indexing. Automatic indexing. Not much, but pieces. Mm. Pieces of it. Pieces were incorporated into the computer system, because the computer system was quite sophisticated. I had 50 people working with a computer system.
In addition to the research section, I noticed that on that chart was also a department for development.
Oh, this is a research.
And I wonder what the difference was.
No, it is the same. Okay, at one time the Department of Development was one guy, in fact, with two or three people, and he was trying to find what the CNRS researchers, Développement et Planification de la Qualité. He was one director of research in Nancy, and he wanted to come to study what the researchers want. And his goal was to drive the center to where the users want. But honestly, he didn't work very well.
So nothing much came from that?
Few things came, as far as knowing what the researchers want. But you know, the researchers, they don't know what they want. You just ask them, do you want that? They say, oh, yes, maybe. And when you come, you say, this is what you asked for. Oh, no, this is not what I asked for. And what do you want? And I'm not sure. We have tried that. And of course, he was not very good. But still, he was not completely responsible. He was not completely responsible. And in fact, now these users, follow-up, etc., is done in the marketing department, because this organigram is no more.
Yes, it's been changed.
It has moved. Even before I left, it has moved. Mm. We have cancelled these, and we have put in the marketing. And anyway, now there is only one organization. INIST Diffusion is no more a filiale. It's only one organization that has obtained step by step the right to commercialize.
Okay.
Because the problem was to obtain from Ministry of Finance. We had the Ministry of Finance with the lockup. And this is what was...
So, just by way of general assessment as to where INIST has come from and where you see it going, and this approach to commercialization, clearly there has to be now some notion of competitiveness with a whole range of other services, because you're in effect competing for the dollars of clients who have other options being offered by a whole slew of database providers in Europe, in the States, elsewhere. I'm curious as to where...
Yes, but I have...
INIST fits.
I have to say that now, with the new director, who is a former administrator of one of the regions, they're coming back to CNRS users. For example, the international relations, they are much less international relations than they had when I was. I don't say they don't want to sell the services. They are selling the services, but they are more centered to French researchers.
Mm.
We never had, honestly, this idea of competing with other services.
The minute though you speak of commercialization,
yes,
it implies
the goal was,
a marketplace in which there is competition.
Yes, but the goal was to be able to collect the money we were gaining.
Oh.
You know, no, to collect and to spend for ourselves. Mm-hmm. It was not so much to collect more and more and more money.
Not in the sense of profit making.
No, but our problem was that we were doing better services, we were selling more, and all this money was going in a hole without end, which was called the Minister of Finance. And we never see the results of our work. And what we wanted, and the CNRS has accepted, is if we have more money, we can do better with this money. We don't want to ask for more money, but we want to do more services, but this money goes back to us. And that was the first goal. It was not so much to try to compete with Chemical Abstracts or whoever else. That was not the goal. Don't forget, it's a public administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never... Look, I was at the CEO of all that. Nobody told me never try to take clients from one or the other. That was never the goal. We didn't want that people walks on our feet. And there were some problems, I wouldn't say personal problems, but philosophical problems with British Library at the time.
That's one of the things I also wanted to ask you about.
But never... you know, we considered sometimes that they were doing things that were not very polite or not very good.
They were very commercially
addressing to sending proposals to our users, come to us, we are better, etc. CNRS people, but CNRS didn't like that because it's the money of CNRS that were going outside for something that could enter back to CNRS. But it was never at the level of the people, never. At the level of the people, I had a bribe with Brian Lang, with David Russell, with Maurice Lyon. We always had excellent relations, and we tried even to have an agreement so that we abandoned the periodicals from which we saved very, very few articles we sent to them. But, of course, this competition was always in the air. But I don't know if I explain myself well. Being a public administration, our goal was not to compete with other public administration. We wanted to be recognized at the European level as a partner. And we succeeded in doing that. CDST was never recognized a part of Bulletin Signalétique, and INIS was recognized not only here, but we had visitors from China, from Italy, big groups of people coming to see what we were doing. This was already a recognition. But we never tried to say we are better than the English or the German or whoever. We said, okay, we want to serve our user. If they want us, okay, they use. If they don't want, for example, like for INIS, okay, we stop. Mm-hmm. There is INIS, we stop. We are part of INIS, and then if one day we need information on nuclear science, we can get it because we are part. Okay, let's spend the money to something else. We haven't got less money for that. We've got the same money, but we use it to be better in the area. But this money competition, and now it's even less when I was there.
That's interesting that it should be turning, you know, slightly away from that orientation. The British Library thing interested me because when the National Lending Library for Science and Technology was set up, that they developed a very commercial outlook,
yes,
where they were interested in making money. They do make millions of dollars, and I was millions of pounds. And I was interested that you were saying that during the move to Nancy, there were 4,000 copies articles being copied a day at that time. Which is again the sort of thing that the British Library was seeing.
And they were doing maybe 10,000
today. And I wondered to what extent the development of their service actually impinged on yours.
No, they're too expensive.
And again, yours was oriented mostly towards the people in France
we
or outside?
For people in France, for big mass. For people outside, from all over the world, because we had periodicals that some people didn't have. I don't know. I don't know where the youth are coming to.
Mm.
Also, the British Library at what time was very complicated with their coupons, etc. That in fact we established the same system. Now it's easier with Visa.
On the credit cards.
But at one time we were not able to accommodate the visa problem. We were not ready, in fact. We have done in 2 years almost a center that never stopped to work. And that was a burden. That was very difficult. I worked 13 hours, 14 hours a day.
I can believe it.
Because it was very difficult. But we were like pioneers. I had a group of people that we didn't count on our time. And it's really a good group of people. One of my deputy, in fact, she was later the director of CBSR. She became the chief of INIST part of human sciences, and it worked very well because we had been working 25 years together. She was a good friend of mine, and she played the game. It was very difficult for her because the people, although they didn't have to move, and they moved very quick, but at the beginning we didn't want them to move.
Also, oh, the section concerned with the Sciences Humaines stayed in Paris.
Stayed a little bit longer. And then they moved.
So
yeah.
They're all present now in Nancy?
Yes. Yeah. 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 In East from Northank.
Mm.
Because recruiting staff, continuing to work, set up the building, to install ourselves in the building of a new conception from Jean Nouvel, which is not so easy. Jean Nouvel is an architect with ideas. You have seen the futurist building.
And
it was not so easy to work in this futurist building. You see the corridors of the library?
It looks fascinating as in terms of design, but I wonder what it would be like to work in it.
We got to, that was a computer system.
Mm. In this area below?
All the below was computer.
Yeah.
And this was administration and research department because they were able to go and use the computer directly. Okay.
Let's turn briefly to some of the other kinds of things that you were doing. You've spoken briefly about your period at the UN. But you were also very much involved, and a little bit about your involvement with Euronet Diane in the European community.
Well, I think we have spoken. I was not. I was involved during 5 years. To see how to organize for the countries to cooperate better in different fields, see if we can exchange information, set up databases, and control what the Commission was doing. And in fact, they were working in medicine, in agriculture, in metallurgy, and they took a lot of time, and I think we have set up a kind of common European European atmosphere to do that, but it was really political, and I wouldn't say that we were not doing practical things. We were just discussing at political level, discussing what the Commission was trying to do. We were working with this automatic indexing, automatic translation, you know, this American system that was implemented in the Commission. I have nothing to really I don't think we have achieved anything important apart the creation of this European movement.
You're also involved with the IKSU-AD early on,
and the beginning.
And you continue to be involved.
Now I am an honorary fellow, but I don't go very much to the meeting anymore. I have left my office, UCIC, IKSU-AD. I still attended so many faith meetings, but more to meet old friends like Ed Kennedy and Dale and some people. But this year, anyway, I didn't go because I was ill.
So tell me your impressions of IKSU-AD and what has it been able to achieve. Is it just essentially a forum for discussion and debate?
No. At the beginning, and now it's still IKSU-AD is a family. Don't forget, in the 60s, there were very few information centers, scientific information centers, very few. And we were getting together, maybe 10, 15 people. We were the pioneers like Dale and like Phyllis Parkins, people like that, Weidman, Sorokin from Russia. And we were all trying to have recognized by the world that scientific information is something, it's a profession, it's a work, it's a job. And we had been doing that all together quite successfully because we were like a family. We really were like a family and we discussed about everything. There was no competition. The competition started maybe a little bit later. You saw my paper on Miles Conrad lecture.
Yes.
And this paper gives the atmosphere of the thinking at that time. But in fact, I consider that in IKSU-AD we have created the profession. We have created the profession from scientists. That was the goal. Nobody was a librarian. We were all scientists. And we wanted to recognize that to process science, you need to be more than a librarian, because your users are not the normal users of the library. They ask you more. That was the main goal at the beginning. After that, we say, oh, how can we do better for our users in working together? And then started these difficulties, because there are real difficulties. How could you work with the Russians, with the Japanese? We each are using our own language. We, for reasons that the French, they don't know English. They don't know. It's true. Some researchers in physics, in chemistry can use English. You go to medicine, just forget. The Medline database, I remember I brought home a research in Medline to my husband. He was a scientist and he was a politician doing political science. He said, what is this garbage? What do you want me to do it? And I left on the top of one of the cupboards we had, and during 6 months he never touched it, never. He said, bring me information that I can read. And that was the things of most of the users were doing at that time. Now it has changed with internet, etc. You have to. And also for political reasons, because the French, they didn't want information in another language. But we have been working on periodicals to give information now to each other on periodicals issued in our countries, in on indexing. We have been doing on automatic indexing a lot of work, even on manual indexing, to try to set up indexes, a kind of type indexes, but so that the automatic indexing could be easier. And then the IKSU-AD, they were sleeping a little bit. When I came from New York, I came back 11 years later, from the UN. Of course I came back to the X-Ready, and I checked a little bit people. I said, look people, what have you done in 10 years? Because there are no changes. I see the same story and with the same talks, etc. after 10 years. And they recognized that more or less was but then with the new people coming and the new... The only problem I see with Ixu-Eli, and now Marty is going to go and someone else is going to take over the secretariat, maybe Marie Mahon, she's one of the candidates on the shortlist, is that if the secretariat goes to America, then why have Ixu-Eli and NFS? Let's decide that NFS would be international. Anyway, this guy from Inspec, I couldn't remember the name. The young guy you saw in the picture, the blonde, and myself, we were always invited to NFS. I am French, he was British, NFS in America.
Well, many of the organizations at the meetings of NFS, when you look at the list, most of the European services are...
Yes, but it was not the case before. Mm. It was not the case before. And then we could wonder why to keep both. Of course, Ixu-Eli was always the possibility for the Chinese, for the Taiwan, for the Japanese, for the Russians to be in an international organization. And also the Ixu proximity is very important, because Ixu-Eli was a part of Ixu very long time, and now they want to put together again.
Why did they come apart? Why was Ixu set up?
Because they considered that they wanted not to have this shape, very heavy shape of Ixu, to have a commercial organization. For example, Elsevier couldn't be a member of Ixu-Eli, and the Rixu, they were commercial. Garfield, anyway, he was member, he was not. Anyway, I said they didn't want, the Ixu could not. They were a scientific organization. And also because at that time, Jeanne Toulien, she was the secretary general of Ixu-Eli, she wanted to be free. She didn't want to have people telling her what to do. And of course, the members of Ixu-Eli say, okay, let's go, let's do it, and separately.
So you think now there's a tendency to move back to the...
Ixu. This is what I was told. I saw the announcement for the job. And they want to keep the relations with Ixu.
It's interesting, this process of moving away and moving back. You described it in Innis itself, and now it's Ixu-Eli, and of course PGI is being reconceptualized, I understand.
Well, now we write a new program completely. We have done an information for all program. Now it's on the executive committee, and then it will go to the general conference, hopefully before the end of the year, how a new program will be adopted.
So can
I'm on the chair of that, and I've been working very hard.
Can you tell me a little about that, the nature of the changes that are being suggested?
To go a little bit broader, not to focalize on small things, to change the focus to new technologies, and to try to put the new technology in an international context for developing countries. Let's say the influence and information highways on the information. The main goal is to move from the traditional information that exists in all the places to an information based more on transferring information using new technology. Of course, there are lots of details there, and this is why. But if you want to have a new program, you go to the site. To the world web world,
mm-hmm.
of UNESCO, you can have it.
I checked the site, but I didn't see that. So.
Yeah, you can have the new plan.
Yeah. I suppose the other organisation I'm wondering about, because I've had a long interest in it, beginning with its creation in 1895, is FID, and I suppose the parallel organisation is IFLA in the library world. And I wonder about your comments, your experiences of participating in...
Look, I was a member of FID many, many years ago, and I don't think they had an important role in the past, mostly because the impact of the Russians, and they are too static. I can say that, Russian myself, and I... and the Russians, they want to have a kind of forum for outside. They were doing certification, etc. Now, I don't know what they are doing. Of course, with Martha Stone, they could move somewhere. But they had very often, don't record that, they had very often very bad directors.
Yes, that's
you know, there was a Canadian at one time who was just a disaster. I don't remember his name.
Is this Ken Brown?
Maybe. I don't know. But he was terrible. He was not doing anything. It was... Martha wants to do things, but apart from these manifesto they had lately, etc., I don't see what they are doing. I don't think they have an impact on the real world of information, the people really working on information, particularly because their representation is national, and nobody wants in the countries to go. In France, nobody wants to go to FID. They say, oh, we don't have money to spend the stupid things. IFLA is different, because IFLA is focused. IFLA is really focused on libraries. And the libraries recognize themselves in IFLA. I don't know who recognized itself in FID. And that is a problem with FID. I don't know if they're going to continue or not. I just don't know. I am a member of their publications board. They never asked me anything. I have just my name on the publication, but I have reviewed once an article that they suggest to throw away. Maybe this is why they didn't ask me anymore, but I suppose that was the rule. It was just new, absolutely new. But I have worked with FID and French representative during many years, but we didn't do anything. We were going to the meetings, that's all.
That's actually
no real work.
I
don't know, maybe Martha, she is very good, maybe she could do something, but it's not so easy. You have to move people, and you have to know who to move. I don't know any important person in FID. Nobody important that is visible on the information scene.
In fact, some of the sorts of things that FID might well have done were probably taken over and done better by IXU-AB, and now IXT with its broad representation.
I'm not sure they're interested of the public cycles in the FID.
No, but that's the sort of thing that FID might well have done
maybe.
As it tried to find a role.
You know, the force, the strength of IXU-AB is that it's the directors that attend the meeting. Really the responsible people. Then at the meeting they can say, I do or I don't. They are not going to say, oh, I have to tell to my government or to my country, etc. I remember Bill Baker saying, But we knew that if he said he'll do it, do it. And we had the responsibility of what we were saying and what we were doing. And that has made IXU-AB really move. And this is still the case. It's attended by the director, by the responsible people. This is very important.
I think too in IFLA that many of the major positions are held by people who actually have authority to do things too.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point.
Available in Germany, through the German network. They are available through Kestel, and They are available online when they want more.
So these
but when 97 yes, it was available, because I had been working lately with European Commission to on a project, European project to create a coordination between the existing host computers, to stay in the several host computers, a Nordic host computer, Swedish, and there were five of them, to cooperate to create the Pascal bridges, so that the user of Dindi can access the Pascal for the databases they don't have. Dindi has medicine, but for the databases they don't have, they could access Kestrel with one simple password and the country. And what they want more, they want to put it in the internet just like that, without the host computer. Mm.
The other part of this statement that we're looking at, which is about the making Francis and Pascal available in some new way, is this business of the hegemony of English, which they feel could be somehow overcome by making...
How could you overcome the hegemony of English? That's absolutely stupid. Two-thirds of the publications are in English. Let's say two-thirds of the publications that count in the scientific world. But what do you want to do, to translate them into French? Look, I am for defending French. I don't like when you are at an international meeting when you have translation into English from French and the country. I always use French. I think it's normal. If we are in France or whatever, if there are translation services provided, I suppose they have been provided for a reason, and you can always express yourself much better in your own language than in another language. I think it's stupid for just snobbish attitude to continue to speak English. But the reality is reality. The English world in information is the most important world. That's it. The why to just to fight what exists? I don't think it's...
Yes, I thought this was a very strange comment, and I couldn't see how one might...
No, sir, more because they wanted to... it's not because Francis et Pascal and Pascal would be on the internet, and then the English would not be German. We would have a little bit more information in French, which could be okay. Anyway, if you go to the INIS site, you can have whatever you want.
Is it that the suggestion here is that it should be freely available?
No.
Because they don't say that.
No, it's not really. They don't say, I don't know. Again, I don't know these people. I know only Jacques Lemaguer.
Yeah.
I don't know the other. I never heard about them.
Well, I thought this was a very strange article. It seemed to be pushing a particular point of view, very much against the idea of that you spoke of, about the political move to the regionalizing.
Okay, the only guy who knows anything about that is Jacques Lemaguer. And from what I say, he now is working with this Institut d'Histoire du Temps Présent.
Mm.
And he probably has initiated that.
Mm.
Which, in fact, is not a bad idea. Why not? But I think the authors, they don't know what they're talking about. They have taken from papers some information, some good, some not.
Yes.
I don't know.
I thought they were, what we would in English say, they're pushing a barrow from a particular point of view, seems to be.
I would be very interested to know if my former deputy, Francine Gou, now she retired, if she read that, probably, because she was still on work in 97, she may have seen that. But...
I can make sure you get a copy of it if you'd like.
I don't mind if you
can
make that copy, send one to me, or just to see how many. much time from me. And I said, okay, after the weekend I will write you. But he said, oh, you know, you have to do it. I said, yes, sure, I'm interested to see. Oh, because you know, don't forget, you are in second month. I say, the kind of threatening me, if I would not be good, they would not continue my second month. And I told him, oh, please don't do chantage with me, because I can stay with you and as long as I want. And of course, in Senares, you have to stay until 65. And I can stay until 62 anyway, you can stay 2 years more. And you know, considering the money I'm getting here, I will have more money staying 3 years less in Senares than 2 years more here. And he said, oh no, this is what I wanted to do. Then I said, okay. Then he left. I showed him a bit of it what we are doing. And after the weekend, I wrote 32 pages of comments on these things. There were a lot of crazy things I could not understand, things I didn't know what it was for. And I said that. And then I never heard about anything. And then because there were problems in Geneva, the Committee Diplomatique said they don't want to pay any more money for the library because they were button in the library, library itself is dead body, there would be no computer in the library. Finally they negotiate that I could go to Geneva. I have almost finished my formation in New York and I moved to Geneva, and I was happy to move back to Geneva because my kids were in France and Chile. I was a little bit lonely. And I went back to Geneva and started in Geneva. Geneva, it was just, you cannot believe what was. There were rooms full of books. If you open the door, you just have to run really fast because otherwise everything is going to fall on you. That was terrible. And now I started buying computers, doing the automation, putting things on order in Geneva, and once, 2 years later, I had a call. Oh, and the secretary of Mr. Fenay, who was the director of CNRS at that time, Mr. Fenay wants you to come tomorrow to see him. I said, look, Rick, I am working for you, you understand me, and I just cannot. And again, it is during the General Assembly. And he said, yes, could you come on... when could you come? I said, I can come on Sunday. I cannot. Okay, you come on Sunday. On Saturday. Then I went Saturday, it was a big room with the director of CNRS, with Goyeri Blancos, and the chief of personnel of CNRS. And they say, oh, we're really happy about the comments you did, etc.
This is two years ago.
No, 2 years later.
Yeah.
2 years after the comments. And that's okay. It happened in 45 minutes. I said, you don't... I was thinking they didn't ask me to come from Geneva to listen how they were happy about my report, about the report that I did. They say, you know why we have called you? No idea. Because we want you to take over the initiative. And I did a stupid question. You know, I was so shocked. I see that I'm working for the UN, and I had no intention to leave. And I have a contract just renewed for the next 2 years. And I said, and what happened to Mr. Jakubiak, who was the guy? Because I heard during the 2 years that this guy was in charge of INIF. They asked him to do INIF, and you know, I couldn't care less who was doing INIF. And as soon as I asked the question, I said, that's a stupidity, because he said, no, but no, ça n'a pas marché, it didn't work, etc. After that, I discovered that we got it. But, I was a little bit surprised, and they're saying, we want you to start immediately. I said, are you joking? I just 6 months ago came from New York. I put everything on, like when you clean a house, and I cannot just leave for you. And oh, we are going to give someone to replace you. I said, there was a story in New York. The director of personnel did want me to go to Geneva. And the Geneva say we cannot do without, it's very important, etc., etc. That was a battle for me to go to Geneva. I'm not sure he's going to accept that I'm being replaced just like that. Or that we will give two people. Okay, and then I went to Geneva and talked to the director of Geneva offices. He was a Belgian guy at the time. She said, oh, but they are crazy, there is no way. She said, look, if you want to go back, I said, look, this is my organization. They can force me to go back. Oh, they say, yes, but they will force you. And at the same time, the French say, okay, we can force, we can go to, but it will take 2 years, the Prud'homme or Whitehead. And then let's negotiate. Finally, I negotiated that I can go to do some work with the Conseil de Projet that was installed on Saturdays and on my vacation days, which means in 87 I didn't have any vacation days because I was using all my vacation days, and so that I could find someone to replace me in Geneva. And they had time to hire. In fact, it was Kofi Annan, who is now the president. He was the chief of personnel. I met him in the French embassy. We discussed. This is how. But I discovered that it was very difficult because all the people say that it's impossible. It cannot be done. I talked to some of the people. Are you crazy to try to do it? And I said, wait. Be interesting to start something, but all the people say no, it's not feasible, it's impossible, and in it started with a lot of difficulties. I moved to Nancy. I was one with the secretary and the husband of the secretary who worked with. He helped us.
What were all the difficulties that people were referring to?
The difficulties were that the CBST was not prepared to move. That we had a library of 27,000 titles of periodicals on 10 floors. We had to move all that. We cannot stop. We had 4,000 requests of photocopies a day at that time. A day. How do you want to continue to do that? We had to build a building. Where to put the staff? The staff didn't want to go. Altogether 30% from the whole Senegal point. We had to recruit about 300, 400 people. Newcomers to train them, to put them somewhere, to when we recruit them, they were nowhere to sit. We had to rent, we were given a small castle of 18th century to start. I was like a Princess de Clare in this castle along with the secretary, and I had to rent in a building the rooms to put the people I was recruiting. All these people have to recruit to be recruited through national conference. It was competition because it's administration. It was poste fonctionnaire. And it's not so easy. I needed 10 people as a jury for the recruitment. It's not that I say, okay, I like you, I take you. No, they had a written exam and then an oral. And we were recruiting 25 and 50, and then we were... At one time, I worked on Cyprus, CDST Rudoyer, where the remaining staff was. Boulevard Raspail, where CDSH was, Human Sciences, Chateau du Monté, where I was officially located, but as I was alone, and for political reasons, they want me to go there. I was a VIP there. I had taken some of the things that we had not found from the press,
Every day on the press was